This is about the water position.
So thank you so much. We're looking forward to hearing your talk.
Okay, so in terms of disclosures, I have none. I have no sponsorship. And I'm also going to make an effort to, I have made an effort to be as unbiased as possible. So in talking about alternative medicine, I can pretty much guarantee that everyone in the room has used some form of alternative medicine. I can also guarantee that everyone has probably a strong opinion on it, and probably as many different opinions as there are people in the room. So one of my first exposures to it was as a fairly new Christian when someone in my church tried to sell me something called Manna Tech. Another exposure, the memorable one in my family practice, when a parent came in with her 12-year-old demanding a chest x-ray because the iridologist, who's somebody who looks at the iris to diagnose disease, had told her daughter that she had lung cancer and so it needed a chest x-ray. So, like I said, everybody has their stories. It's becoming increasingly popular, which, of course, it leads to much areas of confusion and misunderstanding. There's concerns about its efficacy, scientific basis, and there's concerns about spiritual roots. There's also economic, political, and ideological agendas associated with. This popularity extends to Christians as well. Therefore, in the interest and the theme of this conference is good stewardship, I believe it's important that we carefully evaluate it from both scientific and Christian perspectives. And a sort of second aim of mine is understanding some of the reasons for its popularity might help shape a Christian response. So first of all, what is complementary and alternative medicine? We need to think about it in its historical and cultural context, and here's a short history you can read. So we should. Oh, lost the reading. We should also bear in mind that what we call conventional or traditional medicine is actually quite new, and what we call alternative is actually traditional in many other parts of the world, and there's multiple terms used for it. The College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, where I'm from, has this definition, which you can read. Now, it's confusing because this is actually taken directly from the American National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, the NCCAM, which has subsequently renamed itself, and they now have a slightly different definition. And that the terms are, different terms are used, so traditional, non-traditional, conventional, non-conventional, science-based, etc. Depending on who you read, there's multiple different types of, are we calling it CAM from now on, complementary and alternative medicine? The NCCIH, that renamed itself from the previous one, divides it into two categories, natural products and mind-body practices. So the natural products would be some of the things, well, like probiotics that we were just talking about. And then the second category, which is more of a concern for Christians because of some of the spiritual roots, is generally considered mind-body practices. And that includes things like yoga, chiropractic treatments, etc. Now, previously, the NCCAM had five types. So biologically based, which is herbs, dietary supplements, mind-body therapy that we've talked about, whole medical systems, and the whole medical, when they say whole medical, it's taking things like Chinese medicine, which is a whole system with a whole different understanding of what medicine, medical care is. energy healing, and there is overlap between these, but energy healing also presupposes that we all have energy fields around us. And therefore, to treat whatever problems we have, we need to treat the energy fields. And then manipulation or body-based practices. So as you can see, these are really quite diverse. There's very little unity among them. And in terms of, you know, how we approach it, I don't think we should either uncritically adopt everything, and nor should we uncritically just dismiss all of it. And there's a tendency among all of us to do one or the other. So in terms of evidence, I'll go fairly briefly. The Cochrane Review, many of you know, is a large database that takes multiple studies and looks for evidence. So they have a very and there's actually now, in addition to the conventional Cochrane Review, there's a Cochrane Review of Alternative Medicine. But they have fairly stringent criteria that they apply. And some of the ones that they say there's good evidence, for instance, they tend to be almost always the natural-based treatments. For example, cranberry extract for prevention of bladder infections is a common one that has good evidence for it. So these, you know, if you really want to know, this is something that you can look up on Cochrane website. Cancer Association has a good website as well in reviewing, because the herbs that are used are just expanding daily. So in terms of the what I want to really look at more is problems with CAM research. So one of the problems is the terminology that they use. So they'll publish a study. There's a few journals on complementary CAM, a few journals. But when you look at the studies and the conclusions that they reach, they will say things like, you know, this product is used for, which for the uninitiated, it looks like it's something good. Oh, it's used for this. But that doesn't mean that there is evidence for it. They will also say, they will also often only publish studies that show a positive effect, and they won't publish studies that have shown negative effect. And by the way, a lot of these same criticisms also apply to a lot of the Christian research on things like prayer healing. And prayer healing could also be considered a type of CAM, and I think needs to be considered in that same category, and we often don't tend to think of it in that category. And that's a whole another talk, but if you can just think of it in that terms of that category. So we look to evidence-based medicine as sort of the gold standard these days. However, there are limits to evidence-based medicine that are being increasingly recognized. In fact, there's limits to science in general, and I'm hoping you've heard some of that in some of the other talks around this conference. Our knowledge is constantly changing. In addition, there's large gaps between scientific research and clinical practice. So you might find something that, oh, this is shows an effect or shows no effect, but how relevant is that in your actual daily life, and particularly in your practice of medicine? There's individual versus group errors. So studies are done on a specific population of people, but how does that population translate to the particular person you have in your office at a particular moment? The whole idea, and I talked a couple of years ago about the importance of our intuition, and that's being increasingly recognized as a different method of knowledge. And intuition is not something that is easily amenable to evidence-based kind of study. Evidence-based medicine also ignores issues of patients' meaning and values. So you can't consider, when you look at a population-based study, you know, how important is it to this particular person? Along with sort of intuition, also the importance of the placebo effect and the importance of the effect of the doctor-patient relationship on healing is also something that is not well amenable to evidence-based, randomized control studies. So let's look next, though, at the spiritual roots of CAM. So Christian responses range from it's all evil to it's all good, or to what perhaps concerns me more is that we can make it good by rebranding it as Christian. So you will then have people, you know, taking yoga or something and just saying, oh, it's Christian yoga. One of my pet peeves is Christian New Age music that people will take, you know, and you probably see this in all areas of life, taken and just, you know, slap on a Christian label or some Christian music behind it and think that it changes it completely. So one of the things to understand the spirituality of many camp practices is to understand what a metaphysical religion is. And this is a definition of a metaphysical religion. So it basically, New Age religion would be a good example of a metaphysical religion. And it talks about an impersonal force versus Christianity, which talks about a personal God and a personal spirit. New Age thinking often tends to see humans as divine. We have God within us, versus Christianity, where the creator and creation are very separate. Another consideration is that many religions are non-creedal. Christianity is based on creeds. It's very much a language-based religion, whereas religions such as Hinduism are non-creedal and body-based. So, for instance, certain yoga poses are thought to achieve universal consciousness. Theories of energy fields around us, as I mentioned, presuppose a sort of a theory, a spiritual theory about the human body and human healing and connections to this universal consciousness and connections to each other. So a lot of these critiques I got from a book by Candy Gunter Brown, who's a historian and has done a lot of research on it, and I recommend her book called The Healing Gods. I also heard her speak and chatted with her for a long time at a conference. So this is a quote from her, a research on chiropractic treatment. I don't know if I mentioned vitalistic, but vitalistic is a part of the metaphysical religions that posit a vital energy, sometimes called a life energy. It's called in Hinduism, I believe it's prana, in Chinese medicine it's called qi. So you hear all these different terms handing around. And people often don't even understand what they mean. And so we talked about yoga. Many forms of Reiki, healing, massage, therapeutic touch, and acupuncture even are based on metaphysical religions and philosophies that have ideas about these spiritual energies surrounding us. Many of the founders of many of the mind, body, or energy therapies were Freemasons. There's also an idea that... this idea of the subtle energy, there's been some, in fact there was an article in PCSF a few years ago where the author, and again somebody I know actually, is argues that the subtle energy is all demonic, the work of demonic evil spirits. However, you might be thinking this already, the problem is that it's very fuzzy. As you've heard already today, and no doubt elsewhere, it's not black and white, it's not easy. So do you use herbs as just as biomedicine, or do you use them as... And there are some practices that will specifically say that when you have a herbal product, you're getting the vital energy from the plant transferred into you. And sometimes you don't know what you're doing or what the person that's selling you the stuff is believing. Physiotherapy uses manipulation. There's a lot of overlap now between chiropractors and physiotherapy. A lot of chiropractors are really practicing more like physiotherapists, and like I said, some physiotherapists are using manipulation like chiropractors. And then the question becomes, well, when do these practices that originated with a spiritual association, when do they actually lose that spiritual association? you know, there's also times when we, I think the important thing is become aware, but even if we unconsciously practice some form of, metaphysical religion, you know, we have to trust that the Holy Spirit is bigger than whatever is going on as well. But I think we need to be aware and conscious. Okay, so next I want to turn to the popularity of complementary alternative medicine. So it's estimated that between in North America, between 30% and 60% of people use CAM. It's a lot more popular among women, the elderly, and the wealthy. And the wealthy doesn't surprise you, given how expensive it is. So four primary reasons why I believe it's popular, and some of this I'm drawing from various sources, including Candy Brown's work. So first of all is just the limits of conventional medicine, particularly when it comes to complex illnesses like cancer. There just are not quick and easy fixes and not often good treatments. In addition, medical care is often fragmented. You see this, and we've got two specialists in the room. You see one specialist for one thing, another specialist for another thing. And that's why family physicians are wonderful, but that's just an aside. Anyway, physicians are often limited by time, and whether it's in the US and its insurance, or in Canada and it's, you know, different system, but nevertheless, you're limited by time. Whereas one of the key things that natural practitioners use is they spend time with people. Also, with scientific medicine, we're compelled to give informed consent. So I often find myself saying to somebody, well, we don't know how this works, and we don't know that this works 100%, but give it a try. And that doesn't instill confidence in people, whereas they go to their chiropractor and says, oh, come to me every day, and I'll fix you right away. So a second reason, which we heard about from Ian Hutchinson this morning, is our social culture of consumerism. And this is evident in medical tourism that's happening these days, in personalized medicine. We all want to, and sadly, Christians are included among this. We all want to have it my way. We all and to have it now. And we're looking for a quick fix. Nobody likes suffering. Thirdly, the marketing strategies of a lot of complementary alternative medicine. Candy Gunter Brown calls it purging the toxins of modernity. And this is an example of some of the marketing that you'll see, and you can just read through some of the the comparisons, and it's very derogatory towards conventional medicine. I mean, who wouldn't want to restore harmony, and who wouldn't want to promote self-healing? And people often forget that a lot of good physicians will actually use things like diet, exercise to help with health. Along with the marketing strategies, a lot of the CAM promoters will actually neutralize a lot of the spiritual medicine language, and they will replace it with neutral, kind of scientific sounding language, which of course makes it sound good. And they will use terms like holistic, and it's in addition to biomedicine. And then finally, a reason this is popular is the spiritual void. And I think a lot of people will use meditation to fill a gap in their own Christian tradition, for instance, or that the idea that any spirituality is better than no spirituality. And there's also an assumption that, and we've talked about this at ASA many times, but this idea of scientism, that science assumes a materialistic philosophy, so therefore, you know, spiritual medicine must be better than scientific medicine. So that leads us to, then, what is a Christian response? And obviously this relates to bigger issues, and I was a bit provocative in my title about the failure of Christianity. I'm really looking more at how can we respond, what can we learn from this. Oh, and this is another quote from Candy Gunter Brown, who is quite critical of evangelicals. And that's why she calls her book The Healing Gods, saying that people actually idolize a lot of CAM. So the first thing, I'm going to run out of time, right? Yeah. The first thing that we should do is educate people. This idea, we educate as what ASA is doing. So, you know, that the relationship between science and Christianity, that science is not necessarily neutral, and that healthcare is not necessarily independent of our Christian belief. And the idea of healthcare stewardship, looking after our health, needs to be taught, but with avoiding idolatry, the idolatry of health that we see, and that people expect perfection. Theological misconceptions. This idea in some Christian traditions to glorify pain and suffering. And then at the other extreme, other Christian traditions, the sort of health and wealth prosperity gospel, and assume that people should have no suffering at all. And then everything in between. And then thirdly, I think what we need to do is address that need for a deeper spiritual relationship. This is where some of the work by Ian McGilchrist is helpful. Now, he talks about the problem in society of the right hemisphere neglect. And he says in the ancient world, in the Renaissance period, there was a better balance between right and left hemispheric functioning, but it was lost with the Industrial Revolution. So the left hemisphere processes or specialization is typically associated with logic, rationality, all the things us good scientists like, whereas the right hemisphere is more associated with a holistic response, creativity, etc. So he says that the problem with having a world that's dominated by left hemispheric thinking is that religion has become a mere utility, and he suggests that we need metaphor and imagination to truly understand our world. Scholars will this theme has come up in evangelical scholarships as well, in terms of the effects of Enlightenment philosophy on faith and this divide between reason and faith, which we've talked about. There's some move which is encouraging. There's sort of been further interest in the spiritual disciplines and a revival of contemplative practices. But still, many traditions continue to emphasize the word. Yep, to conclude, so I probably confused you more if you were confused already. Point is, it's not black and white, and we need to make decisions in the context of an ongoing relationship with our Creator and Redeemer. We need to make wise decisions, to be knowledgeable, to be aware of possible spiritual underpinnings, to be aware of our own susceptibility, to practice responsible stewardship, to ask why CAM works and why are we seeking it. Churches, as I said, need to educate about science and faith, about other religions, about a theology of sickness and suffering. We also need to offer compassionate care for the suffering. Maybe we should be having fitness classes instead of potlucks. Maybe we need to be emphasizing quiet and contemplative sides more. I think our theologies need to reflect the nuances and complexities of seeking health without idolizing it, seeking it without demanding it, and above all, seeking God's guidance and presence with us in all states of illness and wellness.
Perhaps the only Indian in the room, maybe a couple of us at the conference, you mentioned yoga and all those things. I'm just wondering, as we're talking about Christian response, how you interact with 1 Corinthians, it talks about food sacrifice to idols, which seems to say that a lot of your concerns really aren't relevant if they're not on the surface.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Speak up when you're asking questions.
When I said in the conversation about yoga and for example, herbal healing, how does she interact with 1 Corinthians 7, where it talks about food sacrifice to idols, and which seems to actually be saying that if it's not on the surface, it's not something that you should actually be concerned about in the way you are.
Right. That's one argument. But then on the other hand, elsewhere, Paul talks about don't drink the cup, and I'm quoting off the top of my head, not exactly, don't drink the cup that has been sacrificed to demons. So there's both of these going on. So I think the key is awareness. And like I said before, I don't think that those verses say that we should just either embrace it all or dismiss it all. We need to take each on an individual basis. The idea also of, and this is where I disagree with Candy Brown.
I guess along these lines, isn't prayer considered alternative medicine too?
Yes, yeah.
So,
that's why I'm saying it's not black and white. I'm not saying it's all wrong. I'm saying that we need the awareness. But the point is that, where Paul was teaching food sacrifice to idols, a lot of times people are using CAM without being aware that it is, in many cases, an alternative, another type of religion. And I'm just going to say where I disagree with Candy Brown is at what point, she was asked the question about Easter that has pagan origins, but she responds that it's been so far dissociated. But yet she'll say something like yoga, it's not dissociated at all. And I would argue that, I think things like chiropractic treatment are becoming increasingly dissociated, but they're going to be very different. It's going to be different among different chiropractors. So it's the awareness that I'm really emphasizing.
Jana, to what extent do you think evidence-based medicine is reflective of a reductionistic approach to living systems, biology, organisms in general, and that, without necessarily sort of buying into the alternative, the religious foundations of some of these, that some of these things actually do reflect a more systems-based approach to medicine, or there may actually be systems-level biology that's at work in some of these things that have been discovered by, folk medicine-type things, but they really are real if we understood things at the systems level.
Right, right, and people have, so you've got a few different things in there. Yes, I agree, evidence-based medicine can be reductionistic, and the secular world is recognizing this as well, and there's been lots of, changes and suggestions like personalized medicine that I mentioned. But then, your second issue is that, is there more that we don't know? Absolutely, there's lots more that we don't know, and I think we need to always remain humble. But any time, to be responsible as a practitioner, I have to practice, and I think as consumers, as well, we need to practice based on the best knowledge of the time. But absolutely, there is more. The other question is, can God operate in other religions? Absolutely. I believe the Holy Spirit is bigger than, just our little institutions. So is there truth in other religions? We didn't really have a lot of time to get into this notion of all truth is God's truth. I would say yes, provisionally. I would say that you have to be cautious with overusing that statement. But yeah, we do need to keep an open mind. There might be some undiscovered truths that others are, have some access to.
Yeah. I guess following up on Terry's point is that some of these things I think are absolutely nonsense, but some of it probably do have a scientific basis. And for example, acupuncture, there's been quite a bit of research done there. One of my colleagues had a paper last year in Nature Medicine, so very highly respected peer-reviewed journal.
Right.
And he showed the biological basis for how electroacupuncture can be working. He's a neuroimmunologist. And understanding more about how the nervous system innervates the, the spleen, for example, and how these things are very interactive and how you maybe can manipulate those. I tend to be a skeptic, and I've never been to a acupuncturist, but reading this, I'm beginning to say, okay, this is possibly true.
Right.
But
right.
I have had physiotherapy where they're using pressure points, and it does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely, there has been for some things, some scientific basis. But the point is that with the Chinese medicine philosophy is very different than the sort of the scientific philosophy. So when it gets to the point of practice, and then Western medicine uses its approach on it, sure, they may well find something that they have. But the basis of it is based on the assumption of the meridian. And the five life forces, or the five opposite forces, etc.
But they may have stumbled upon the, some things that are biologically real.
NIH, absolutely.
The NIH has, funding available for complementary alternative medicine.
Well, that was the organization I was talking about. They're funded by the NIH.
Some more questions.
One of the arguments that I hear often from people who make alternative medicine is the fact that they say that the pharmaceutical industry has such tight controls over what is accepted medically that there are a lot of other things that could possibly and should possibly be included that are not, because it's not as cost effective for the pharmaceutical industry, and so they're looking at making their big bucks. What would you say about that?
Okay, so in terms of funding for research, I would say that's limited, because the pharmaceutical companies obviously fund a lot of the research, and they may not fund alternative medicine.
I do drug development. I just don't think that ends up being accurate. The drug companies can make a lot of money off of alternative treatments that work. So, this is actually like where you were saying, it's actually, there's tons of funding.
Well, and let me finish. I think the opposite problem is happening now is that there's a lack of regulation. So, versus pharmaceuticals have so much regulation, whereas a lot of the alternative, the natural medicines are not regulated. And that's where governments are sort of hurriedly trying to put some regulations in place.
Is there a way to even that out? Is there a way to do more regulation on
It is happening. Not everybody's satisfied with the degree to which it's happening, but it is happening.
So one more question.
This is actually just a comment, is that we have to be careful, because large medical centers are now using complementary medicine for patients.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially helpful. I'd rather have a patient who's acupuncture and narcotics all the time, but they're charging them cash. So Cleveland Clinic, for example, recently got in trouble because patients were spending millions of dollars essential oils and things like that, that we claim for like 100% cash. It's not going to cover life insurance. It may be a nice amount of money. So we have to be kind of careful saying this is pharmaceutical companies trying to hide stuff from us, because a lot of medical centers are just selling.
I mean, you have to keep in mind, that's not why it's all back. We got to go to break. I'll just say one key alternative medicine thing coming up is marijuana.
Yeah.
It's alternative medicine.
Recently legalized in Canada.
Thank you.